It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. Well, if you hear the sounds in the background, it's the sounds of a barnyard. And that's something you don't hear farms across the country as much anymore. Used to be there was a time where all sorts of farms had lots of livestock and sheep and goats and cattle and you name it. But we're one that still has it here today. We're discovering a barnyard, actually called Barnyard Discoveries, on a farm in central Illinois. And in this particular barnyard, it's about time to feed the animals, and that's why everything is making noise here in the background. And my guest, who's going to be doing his chores, and I'm going to be following him around while he's is Ron Wasson. And yes, the same last name as mine is my brother. And Ron's has this barnyard, and I'm going to have him share with us how he shares this barnyard experience with other people. So right now we're feeding the goats. Ron, it's good to be in your barnyard.
I'm glad you're here.
So what are you doing right now? Who are these goats that you're feeding?
This is we maintain just a small number of goats, but we keep on what we're doing with our business, we keep a number of smaller breeds so that they work in our we have a limited footprint in our trailer itself, and so we have to use smaller breeds. So the ones we have right here are Nigerian dwarf goats that we use for that purpose. And so these are actually some that we actually use to produce our own babies from them eventually.
So when you get goats like this, I mean, at some place, at some time, people were raising them for what? For food, for milk, for, I mean, the origin of these goats, even though now you're not doing the goats particularly commercially to market the product from it. I mean, what were these goats originally? Were they milk goats or sheep or meat goats?
These were primarily milk goats. And part of the fact that what we're dealing with is the Nigerian dwarf, and the dwarf goats is just basically, from the standpoint, have hit a major resurgence as far as so many of the area, the local homesteaders and things like that are moving out to small acreages are looking for a smaller version because they've got a limited space themselves. They look for a smaller version of the animals. The Nigerian dwarf goat gets to be about half the size of what the normal productive dairy goats used to be. And so what they're doing now is that it's brought a popularity on the smaller breeds like this. So they require less inputs, but they're still, the particular Nigerian dwarfs will still do about a quarter milk a day.
Oh, okay. But you're not milking them, though.
I'm not milking them.
And you're digging in and getting some more feed right now.
Horse feed at this point. Yeah, we're doing horse feed at this point.
So you got a small horse, and this one is a miniature horse.
Miniature horse. Rocky is only 30 inches tall, and he is, for what we're doing, it's important to have a horse. A lot of what we do in as far as getting involved in school tours, things like that. And so all the animals that we have here, all the typical farm animals, basically serve as an introduction for us as far as being able to establish a dialogue with students, because the animals themselves grab the attention, but then that opens up doors for us to start answering questions and delivering a message about the animals. And, you know, with the small horse, people have always questioned the horses and the importance of the horse on the farm and things like that. And it gives us the chance to actually reach back in history and explain a little bit about, we bring in the term horsepower, and we start talking to students about how, prior to the mechanization of agriculture, how the horses were the backbone of the actual farm work itself. So it gives us a little bit of chance to go back and talk history, too, along with the modern parts of the farm.
So you alluded to this. You've got a trailer, and that trailer you can load up with all this assortment of animals, and you take them to schools. And how old are the kids that usually come tour
Primarily, we work a lot with the Ag in the Classroom program, which is an American Farm Bureau program, and that one is primarily geared through third through sixth grades. So a lot of the schools that we work with are in that three to sixth grade area.
But you're not limiting it to schools either. You're also going to, what, birthday parties and special events?
That's where the, when we started the business, you know, my whole idea was I did not ever want to have a petting zoo. That is not what I wanted to do at all. So what we wanted to do was make an educational program available to people and to the consumers. And we started out, I knew that there was a niche there that I could work into to educate school kids through that program. I've always been a big supporter of the Ag in the Classroom program, knew that was a possibility. But then beyond that, the spinoff from that has been we've gotten to the point where we're invited now to public events. We do a lot of consumer events. Last year we did several political rallies. In fact, where politicians were wanting to touch on, you know, on farm issues and things of that nature, invited us in to be there as part of that, as part of the backdrop for that, for our political parties. We've gone into, we do a lot of work with different schools and churches. We do a lot with church organizations, community festivals, community events, anything like that. But where we can reach, you know, every time we pull out of the driveway, we're going somewhere where we're actually touching a consumer, an agricultural consumer of some kind.
So in these cases, I mean, what's the largest crowd you've ever had that have come through and talk to you about farming and agriculture and animals, and what's a big attendance might be?
Well, we have a number of events that we do, full day events, and that we'll actually have 3,000 to 4,000 people through in a day's time type situation. But a typical, we do a lot of our events, I would say our community events especially, run in that 2,000 to 3,000 bracket, somewhere like that.
Well, you better grab some more feed here. We got animals all over the place that you can tell by listening to this that they're making noise because they're hungry.
Our school events typically, though, probably range. We range in our school events. It really works out pretty well the way that we're set up to do about a 15-minute per class situation. So if we're running, you know, we can go in and do a field trip in the parking lot. We can touch 200 students in 2 hours' time in a typical school presentation. So that, I would say, you know, that's pretty typical as far as what the schools go.
So you've got lambs, and you've got a calf, and you've got lots and lots of chickens. We're feeding a calf right now. Is this a dairy calf, right?
It is a dairy calf. We have to, you know, with our trailer, we do have small footprint as far as the trailer itself is a 32-foot trailer and split into pins where they're 4x4-foot pins in the trailer. So we have to, the thing that we found with that, since we started the business, we found that we need to do some things. I started out thinking that maybe we could do some miniature animals that would stay long, that would have longevity in the trailer. But it also, I haven't found miniature animals that really represent agriculture in the way that I want it to. We tried miniature pigs, we've tried miniature cattle, things of that nature, and they really don't exemplify the kind of animal that I want to have. So I want to have a real farm animal. And so we have our calf, we'll have to rotate out about every 70 to 90 days. We have to rotate our calf out. We'll either get a new, if we can get a, dairy calves are pretty easy to find for us. It's a little tougher to find beef cattle, but we'll rotate between a dairy calf or a beef cattle about every 90 days at least.
Same. Is this a Guernsey?
This is a Jersey here, Jersey. A Jersey cross that we have here where there's a couple. We have a couple of large dairies in our area that we work with that it's pretty easy to find a bull calf from them when we need it. So we've got a couple of large herds that we're able to get in and use calves from them.
Because they keep having to produce calves so that they can keep the cows providing milk.
Exactly. And that's, from most of those situations, they're going back to those, it's... those situations, the producers there are usually looking to, you know, to replenish their own stock, and so that's why they keep the females, they keep the heifer calves back themselves, and that makes the bull calves a lot more available to us then.
Well, what about the pig? Is it also coming from a commercial operation?
The pig itself is actually from we work with a large sow unit in...
Explain what a large sow unit means.
Well, this particular, it's a production farm where they actually, they have the breeding farm where the sows give birth to the pigs at this breeding farm. This particular unit has 2,300 mama sows that they have there that they're actually producing pigs. And one of the things I find interesting about that that's changed in agriculture is the fact they have 2,300 sows and they do not have a single male animal on the farm.
There are artificial insemination.
Artificial insemination on every one of those females on that farm. And these pigs then, they have, they're on a rotation, a very tight rotation, and the farm that we're working with is in Illinois. And every Friday afternoon, they wean approximately 1,100 pigs every Friday afternoon. These pigs will be 19 to 21 days old on Friday afternoon, and they'll take these pigs, and then they take them from the Illinois farm here, and then they go out to contract producers to be fed out in Iowa.
Wow. So that's a lot. I would do the math as you were talking there, but a sow that is that many sows, they might have, what, 2.5-3 liters a year? Or
typically, yes.
And yeah. So that is a lot of pigs. And that brings up the other issue. You've got examples of all these different animals, and people get to see the animals, and you can talk about agriculture. Does it ever come up to explain what people would call factory farming and these large-scale industrial size operations, like your dairy comes from and your pig comes from and so forth? Do you find people that ever ask you about that, or the parents of the kids or somebody that are asking about these large farms versus, again, what you're able to show, all this variety of livestock?
A number of times that we do come up with those types of questions, and people ask about factory farms and things of that nature. But it still boils down to the fact that we're still dealing with the individuals that are actually doing the production. You know, how they do their bookwork is one thing. You know, if they can hire a corporate accountant, if they're that large that they hire a corporate accountant to do their bookwork is one thing. But still, the people that are out there doing the work still have that same basic ethic as far as raising quality livestock, being health conscious, being conscious of the, you know, being good stewards to the animals, being good stewards of the land. And so that's, you know, we focus more on the fact that the people, you know, it's still, you know, these people may get their paychecks in a different way than what they did 50, 60, 100 years ago. But still, they're still the same kind of people that are out there doing the work with it. And so they're the ones that are really the ones that need to be given the credit for the way the animals are raised.
Well, then the other thing I wonder about, when you've got young people that are seeing all these animals and hearing about farming, and you have a chance to see these conversations get about farming and how people care for livestock, does it ever come up, the question of, don't we eat these animals sometime? Does that become an awkward issue with some of these tours, that these animals end up as meat someday?
It's gotten to the point where it's not really awkward. We don't dodge the question at all. In fact, in our trailer we have a lot of informational graphics in the trailer itself. We have some graphics up with showing cuts of beef, showing cuts of pork, where those particular cuts come from. We don't dodge that question at all. That's what I say. We don't want to have a petting zoo. We have an educational experience. So, you know, and when that question does come up, we just, you know, primarily, you know, face it head on and explain that, you know, the farmers, you know, everything in our world has a life cycle. There's a life cycle to everything. And, you know, the farmer's job is to maintain that life cycle, to give these animals the best life, care for them the best that they know how, as far as giving them food, shelter, and good health for however long that life cycle may last.
Yeah. Well, and we should also talk about when you go in the trailer itself, it's really nice and modern. You've got flat screen TVs on the wall, and you got little pens that put some of the animals in, and the kids and adults and whoever's there can walk through. But can you explain, you also touch on explaining like crop production, and you've got some of the some information, don't you, about how the feed is produced for these animals?
We actually do, as far as we want the entire, you know, we want them to understand the entire farming experience. And, you know, farming isn't just animal farming by any means. And so we do, we have a display area set up with different primarily locally grown Midwestern crops, as far as we have acrylic display boxes set up with them showing facts and actual samples of different grains, as far as corn, soybeans, wheat, and then we also have a display with hay. We also have another display that we show where these products are actually used then and mixed with vitamins and minerals to improve, to make a balanced nutritional diet for the animals into a feed pellet that the animals actually consume.
Oh, that's exciting. So from these, how many years have you been doing this now?
This is starting our sixth year now.
Six years. So you have repeats that people are coming back and saying, oh, I saw you last year, I want to come back and see it again. And
oh, we have a lot of people that enjoy coming to see what we do. We try to keep changing a little bit as far as some of the information that we have in the trailer itself, but then we also have events that we've become a standard part of their annual programs or their annual calendar. A lot of the schools will do, they want us the second week of May each year and things of that nature. A lot of the festivals and events that we do that way. Corporate things that we'll go back and do corporate picnics and things of that nature back on a, you know, we're marked on the same weekend every year for them now.
Well, I would think, too, when you're doing these community-type events and you got these big events going on, you had some people coming here and seeing some of all these really interesting variety of chicken breeds that you have, that they try to figure out how they may be able to have chickens in the backyards. Because, I mean, your barnyard is not far from a city, and more and more people are figuring out, I want to be able to have some chickens in my own backyard. You run into people that are trying to find out how they might be able to do that from you when they see that you've got chickens that you're able to show them all these different varieties?
Well, that's been one of the interesting things, too, as far as we've gotten to the point now where it's not only we find that we're a resource not only on the day that we're there or for the, you know, 3 or 4 hours that we may be on site somewhere. People pick up a business card or pick up information from us, come back and check things out on our webpage. We try to keep very active involvement that way, but I get calls all the time as far as people that have decided that they want to get a few hens and things of that nature, or want to, you know, maybe want to get a dairy calf, or maybe find a calf for their own that they could raise their own meat and their own pastured meat, raise it the way they want to, that type of thing. The goats, we have people calling about where they can access goats and things to do their own milk. So we get a lot of that, but then we also try to maintain on our web page or on our website especially, we try to maintain a links page there where we link into most of the commodity organizations and a lot of the national organizations as far as the Farm Bureau and the different state Farm Bureau organizations, try to keep that up to date so that they've actually, you know, they can come to our site and use that as kind of a distribution center, more or less. If they've got more information about a particular species or a particular animal or something, you know, they can go to our site and then be directed on and get more specific as far as being able to go into a poultry association or being able to go to the wool growers, go into the, you know, the cattlemen's association, the pork producers, things like that.
Well, then I think it's a good time to mention where your site is. So how do people find this information? Where do they find you on the internet?
We're just basically, it's just barnyarddiscoveries.com.
Is that plural or singular?
It's plural.
Okay.
Barnyard
okay.
Discoveries, because there's a lot more than just one discovery in a barnyard. So okay. It's a plural, it's Barnyard Discoveries. And we can, with our site there, and then we try to maintain our social media too. We try to maintain a Facebook page and trying to keep things up to date on that as well, and keep some things interesting there. But primarily, it's if they go to our website, that's the best place. And from that, we have we direct on our school visits, we direct the teachers to that to our website, and that way they're able to go into our website and they go in and they can access state or national Ag in the Classroom programs, where there are just, you know, so many different products that they can get, or so many different sources of knowledge there. The knowledge base that's available on the internet, you know, is in agriculture is just unlimited, and so they go into to those sites and they can and pick up things applicable to their own grade levels that way.
Well, you know, Ron, I know that you're coming from a family that's been raising has been farming for hundreds and hundreds of years. But like many people, you tried commercial farming for a while, and you're not farming commercially any longer. And there's many others that are former farmers. It seems like you're living the dream, though. You've been able to get back into it and have your hands all over livestock. You are growing livestock again. You're not growing a million hogs or anything like that, but you're staying involved with it. So would it be right for me to guess that you're sort of kind of living the dream?
It would be. I was probably typical from the standpoint that when I started farming, and it was a situation that a lot of folks my age will remember the early 80s, the interest rates of the early 80s and things that we dealt with there. And so I had to go to it was one of the situations that that there was not enough on the home farm or on the family farm to support the number of families that we needed to at that point. So I went to town and got a job in town and was able to you know, stay involved in agricultural jobs for a short time after that, but then got caught up in the commercial business as far as in the business sales and things of that nature, and had to do that for a long time. And you know, eventually, again, part of the typical the nature of business, I guess, is that you start getting to that age in life that you realize, or they realize, that someday they're going to have to pay you a retirement or a pension of some kind, and so they tell you that it's time for you to go seek employment elsewhere, and you find that you're maybe not as employable as you once were as far as some of that goes. And that's where this all came from, was the fact that I was downsized out of a corporate restructuring program, had went out, tried to find a job at my age that couldn't find something that was really working for me, and I just basically had to get creative. And so this is where the creative juices led.
And they've got you up doing chores in the morning with all these hungry animals around us that are still making noise, and hope that we follow up on, end up on this podcast so they can get on and get fed. And I think it's finally, I guess the journey, and again, we're conducting this conversation. We've got surrounded by all kinds of animals that are looking at us. I wish they're paying more attention. They just want to be fed. But I'm curious, what makes you kind of optimistic? I mean, you're out there in an environment where people are very skeptical about livestock production, whether it's sustainable, they're suspicious of farmers, and yet you're coming into contact with thousands of people from cities all the time, their kids, their parents, everything from kids to nursing homes. I'm curious what makes you the most optimistic about the near future.
I think the thing that makes me the most optimistic, and part of it was the good fortune that we had as far as when our business, we started the business, is also kind of meshes with some public. The public is now more interested in knowing where their food comes from, and we've been able to capitalize not only off of that, but we've also been able to work with, go in and help educate, as I said, I started out thinking I was going to be educating students, but we've gone far beyond that as far as educating people that are really interested in the green movement, interested in the whole farm-to-table type concept of where their food's coming from, how it's being produced, who's producing it, where it's being produced, that type of thing. We're building off of that, and we're a mobile example that can show that, that can actually give them that. But you know, to me, the best thing that happens to me is that when I go to an event, and forever, however I may be at that particular event, the number of times that, you know, I watch people come in as a family, and I see, you know, moms and dads walk in with kids to show them little animals. Well, that's great. But then when they get into our trailer and actually start reading some of the information that we have posted about the animals, or they ask me questions about the animals or about the grains that we have on display and things of that nature. And then my favorite response was, I didn't know that, or I never realized that, or, you know, things of that nature. Last week I did an event that a Rotary Club sponsored a visit for us at a school, and members of the Rotary Club came down that day to tour while the students were going through, and so members of the Rotary Club were there that day. And that particular day I had a realtor, a banker, and an attorney standing in front of my chicken pen, and I was explaining to them there was not a rooster required in order to create an egg. And I had these professionals that were 50 and 60 years old, and I was, you know, I was teaching them that lesson that day. And to me, that's what really rewards me, is that that I'm out there able to still be an advocate for agriculture, and to help promote the product, as far as I still believe in the family farm, and I still believe in, you know, what the people on the farm do. And it's always been farmer's nature. They've never been real good about telling their own story. So I guess I'm proud to be out there to the one that's kind of telling the story for them.
Well, you're doing a great job at it. And I know for a fact that you're inspiring some people. You're inspiring some little people, too. I know one in particular that's a grandson of mine who lives in Cincinnati, who's 8 years old. And you ask him now, he's had this experience of banging around your animals, and say, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? And his answer today is animal scientist. So I imagine there's a lot of folks that are inspired by the stories you're sharing, and also just glad you're telling this story, giving people an opportunity to talk about agriculture. So Ron Wasson with Barnyard Discoveries, check him out online. Thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
It's been a pleasure. Enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.